Welcome to Shit You Wish Your Building Did, the must-watch show for transforming your commercial spaces into smart buildings. Today, we're diving into the world of building consultants with Zane Mansha from UK Master Systems Integrator Vanti. We explore the current state of technology in commercial buildings. And what challenges does Zane face when working on projects, and what, if anything, is changing? So stick around for this insightful conversation. And remember to like, subscribe, and hit the notification bell to stay updated with our latest episodes. Are you ready to transform your building with smart technology? Then let's jump right in. So, Zane, sure. Welcome to the podcast. Really pleased to have you here today.
Hi, James. Yeah, nice to be here. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah, of course. I'm really interested in the way that you describe yourself. You have to tell me, what is a realist technophile?
What is it other than a pretentious combination of letters?
Yeah, other than that.
The technophile part of it is just always have been a lover of technology from a young age. I was an only child. I was left alone at home a lot. Got a hand-me-down Windows 2000 computer as my first machine, and then my parents lost me to the internet from that point on. So, you know, have always loved technology, have always been told off about spending too much time on computers and spending all my pocket money on the latest gadgets. And that sort of has just become a core part of my personality. It used to be a problem my parents dealt with. Now it's a problem my partner deals with. with all the random stuff that is now dotted around our house, and my insistence that anything that comes into the house have a USB-C port. So that's really where the technophile part of it comes from. And then the realist is, I guess, mostly because of my sort of engineering background. Everything that we used to sort of look at from, so for context, I did aerospace engineering at university, and you know, we were looking at planes, satellites, etc. And what was really nice about that was how much everything had to come back to, but how much does it weigh? Because when you're trying to get everything up in the air, it doesn't matter how good or fancy the technology is, it always comes down to where the rubber meets the road, and you know, how do physics work, and how do you make these things interact in a way that you know, still obeys the laws of the universe. And that's where the realist part of it for me comes from, is not just thinking up fancy ideas, but doing them in a way that is actually deliverable and is manageable and safe and realistic.
Yeah, I mean, well, like a perfect description of what you, I guess, what you need to deliver projects from in smart buildings.
Well, yeah, that and more you need in smart buildings.
Indeed, yeah, and that's what we're going to get onto. So you work at Vanti, but that's interesting in itself. Like, given your background there in aerospace engineering, how did you end up in the commercial building field?
Yeah, sort of by way of corporate, I guess. So I studied aerospace at uni, but then I found that the majority of the work in that field was, one, it's a duopoly. So, you know, as much as we complain about the big four or the big five in this industry, within that space is basically Airbus or Boeing and no one else. And so you either end up working within those sort of constrained environments where it's very much around legislation and regulation, you know, a lot of the news stories you hear about the latest Boeing planes is because the latest Boeing plane is actually a plane they designed 30 years ago, and have updated very little over the course of the years. But I found that it wasn't really, as much as I enjoyed studying it, it wasn't in practice what I wanted to be doing. I wanted to work with technology systems. I wanted to work in a space where you had the freedom to, I guess, play and iterate a little bit. And so I ended up having my first career role with Schneider Electric, and got really interested in everything that they were doing on the building technology side of things. And then that was really the start of things, and then just progressed from there with sort of in the background, constantly wanting to discover what the better ways of doing things might be, and how we might actually go about delivering the kind of end goals that people were talking about. So then just sort of a learning journey that then took me towards Honeywell because of Niagara and Tridium, and then from there into Vanti because of the master systems integrated space and this idea of middleware that sits above building systems.
Yeah, right. Good. So how would you describe the current state of technology that we have in commercial buildings at the moment?
I think that's a tough question because it's sort of dependent on which lens you look at it from. Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for the tough ones. I think overall, we're behind. I think everyone in our industry knows that from a technology perspective, we're behind. There are things that have been standardized across other segments that we still are not quite there with. You know, when it comes to even simple things like network infrastructure and getting everything to communicate over secure IP rather than legacy protocols. So from that perspective, I feel like WebAid, what I'm starting to notice is there's a lot more focus on the right things nowadays compared to even 3 or 5 years ago in terms of what people want to achieve. And I think some of that's been driven by COVID, some of that's been driven by the energy crisis, et cetera. But I feel like we have a lot of the right ideas and a lot of the right pull factors in terms of the direction that we're heading. I think on execution, though, we're extremely poor as an industry in terms of the how we go about doing things. So overall, probably I'd say a failing grade, probably a D. We're almost there. We all, you know, we're close to being a passing grade. We're certainly nowhere near being, you know, work that we should be extremely proud of and shouting to the universe about.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's good. I certainly don't disagree with that assessment. Did you mentioned there sort of a little bit about delivery and that being a particularly poor area. Do you want to dig into that a little bit more? Is there sort of big reasons that jump out to you there?
Yeah, definitely. I think, when we get to delivery, that's really going back to the sort of the realist part of how I see technology is that's where rubber meets the road, right? It's where you go from having lots of ideas that you put into a specification to actually trying to deliver something in the physical built environment. And the main thing that to me is a roadblock that we run into over and over again is lack of skills. There is a certain skill set that exists within the construction and contracting space. There is a whole essentially separate siloed set of skills that exists within technology and IT systems. And there are a few companies that are sort of somewhere in that middle space, that gray area in between, trying to be the glue. However, we find, you know, most often where the problems occur is when you're speaking to people who don't have a technical IT or networking background and trying to explain those technological ideas to them when realistically in their world, it's a case of, you know, pipes, cables and things plugging together, not so much the how do they plug together or talk to each other part.
Yeah. Okay. So do you think, is it fair to say something like there's too much technophilia but not enough realism in there, or where is that balance lie? Are we more one than the other in the industry?
Depends if you mention the words AI or not. But I think if there isn't too much technophilia, for me personally, I don't think you can love technology too much, and I encourage people in this space to develop more of that interest in technology as well. I think the part of it that we're lacking is definitely the realism part. And part of it, I think, comes from a lack of understanding, but part of it is definitely coming from a lack of validation, of actually, you know, taking ideas like a machine learning system that controls a building completely automatically, improves comfort, reduces energy, all of these things. That is very easy to articulate as an idea, but thinking about it from a realistic perspective of, you know, it okay to have a system that is constantly tweaking a valve to figure out what the best valve position is when there's real friction and wear and tear happening on that valve throughout that entire time? And we're not really validating these ideas against the real world. We're very rarely getting, you know, a skilled mechanical engineer to sit in the room, or someone that's familiar with the physics of a control system and how changing one thing might influence dozens of other things. So getting more of those people together when we're sort of coming up with the what do we want to do part is, I think, where we'll need to end up, so that, you know, we can be lovers of technology all day long, but we need to make sure that what we're thinking about is actually deliverable.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, in your role within the, you know, as a consultant within this master systems integrator company, Vanti, I mean, you're obviously dealing with clients. And you mentioned there about making sure that you deliver, of course, for them, deliver what their expectations. I mean, how would you describe, you know, again, this is just typically, right? You can't describe every client, but like in general, you know, how, what are the problems you face there in delivering what it is that they want? Are expectations aligned with reality, for example?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. I guess it depends, really. What I think changes that I've encountered is sort of trends that seem to be making people think about things that they weren't thinking about before. So I think home automation, for example, has taken off in a big way, and people are used to being able to go home and, you know, have the controls for their lighting or even their radiators on their phone. And then immediately that same idea arrives within the commercial space of, you know, it'd be great if we had a space and I could control it from my phone. But at no point during that has anyone thought about, well, your home is a, you know, a very constrained environment where you control all of the devices and the network that they live on. Whereas in a commercial space, you've got many more things to think about in terms of who owns the network. Are you on the same network? Are you accessing that control point through the cloud? In which case, you know, what's the security implications of that? So there are definitely ideas that are flowing into the world of commercial buildings from the kinds of experiences people are used to having in consumer technology. But I think the hard part there is trying to draw the lines of who's responsible for what and how do you do it in a way that is still secure and safe and maintainable long term. In terms of how the clients come to us with challenges, what we're finding is, previously, there was a lot of hard work in convincing people of the value in doing smart building works or doing energy retrofits or, you know, introducing occupancy detection. However, now, post-COVID, post-energy crisis, people see the value. In fact, there's incoming demand much more so than sort of outgoing, hey, we think you need this. People now come in and say, we definitely need this. So the part of that has become a lot easier in terms of we're not really trying to convince buyers that there's value in what they're buying, but we're much more now trying to distill the ideas they have into things that are deliverable and maintainable long term.
Well, that's really interesting to hear. I mean, that's a pretty fundamental shift, actually, isn't it? In the
I think it's a case of people do what they see, right? People can talk about technology, but until someone has an experience, they don't really fully grasp it. And now that consumer technology is heading in that direction, I feel like people are having that experience much more often, and so they're able to visualize it when you talk to them about it in a commercial setting.
Yeah, and I guess that they then understand. They understand the value. They've seen it. They know what it can do for them. And I mean, and again, so without, you talked about that change within the client. I mean, but how would you say? I mean, I guess because again, they're not all equal, right? I'm sure, and I'm not don't name names, but like you have bad clients and you have good clients. Like, what is a good client to you guys? What is you think? Yeah, that really worked because, you know, they brought something else to the table and that partnership really delivered what it was supposed to deliver.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there is a massive spectrum of clients in terms of what they like to work with and also what they want to achieve. But I'd say the most consistent thing is a driven stakeholder. That for me, when I compare the types of clients we've worked with or I've worked with over the years and the kind of end goals that we've achieved through those clients, the ones that stick out as the biggest successes most often are the ones that have a really driven stakeholder behind them on the client side. That could be a head of real estate, that could be a particular facility manager. Sometimes it might be a CTO. You know, the higher up, the more senior they are, the better the results are generally going to be because they'll be able to wrangle teams within their own organization to give you the input that you need to design a better solution. But yeah, more than anything else these days, what I'm looking for when we're engaging with clients is who is the person in the room that really cares and cares about it, not just in the sense that I've got a certification to deliver or I've got a specification to meet, but rather I've got deep interest in making my building better and I want to get help to achieve that. It doesn't need to be any more complicated than that, but that as a starting point is where I find the easiest client work tends to happen, is to have one of those sort of heroes, you know, the stakeholders that within a client organization will be teaching everyone else why they want to move in this direction and then absorbing some of the pain that comes with that if it comes to trying to talk to an IT team or trying to push something through finance.
Yeah, when it actually becomes hard, they're prepared to go that extra bit further to get it done.
Yeah, they've got the end goal in mind.
Sort of following. Yes, exactly. Following on from that a little bit, I guess as I understand it, one big part of your remit in what you do is taking or translating those kind of user requirements, what the client has asked for, and then translating that into technical design and making sure it's delivered. Can you talk a little bit about that process? How collaborative is it? Like, how has it changed over the time you've been delivering projects?
Yeah, so I think previously, before my work at Vanti, it was much more a conversation about point solutions. A client may come to you with a problem, or specifically come to you with an inquiry about a solution that already exists, and then try to go down the route of deploying that. So if we look, for example, at predictive maintenance as a use case or a technology, there were a lot of point solutions in the industry that did that, and clients would say, "Hey, I want to get better at maintaining my assets. I want to do it in a predictive way. How do I go about deploying the solution on my estate?" So that used to be a lot of the conversations was around these point solutions, and now it's becoming a lot more of a conversation about these are all the outcomes I want to achieve. How do I put the infrastructure in place to allow me to achieve those outcomes at a time and date that is convenient for me? Rather than, you know, deploying one point solution today, discovering more needs and requirements from the results of that point solution, and then realizing that you've either got to go back to the drawing board and find a new solution or strap another thing on top. And people were getting to the point of having, you know, three or four or five different solutions that they've essentially duct taped to their building, and then realizing that none of them work together, none of them share data. And that problem got people, a lot of people, to the point where now they're trying to think about this from a perspective of, you know, layers of a cake or a stack, and how do we go about creating the right infrastructure and foundation to build features and solutions on top of. In terms of the process, it tends to be quite collaborative, but it is highly dependent on the level of engagement that you have from the client side. Sometimes it's as simple as, "Hey, this is what we want to achieve. We're making it your problem. Come back to us when you have a solution." Others will want to be deeply, deeply involved with exactly how the solution is formed and be informed throughout that process, depending on you know, their sensitivity to different things. So I think a key example, for example, is government entities. Mm-hmm. So they tend to be very risk averse. They tend to be very sensitive to how are we authenticating, how are we granting access, who could get into this device from outside the building if they wanted to, when we're talking about IoT sensors and things like that. So they'll be part of the process collaboratively when we go from, hey, what do you want to achieve, to how do we do it? They'll be in that process, maybe on a weekly, bi-weekly basis, where we're feeding back potential options, getting feedback, and then adjusting the solution as we go. And that process is generally, there's always some common steps. So starting with the outcome, then working back from that to what are the systems that we need to put in place to enable that outcome? What are the data sources? What are the control outputs, etc.? And then working back a step from that again to look at each of those components that we've identified, and then picking a vendor solution or a particular product for each of those subsets. Some of those are existing. You know, when we're looking at buildings that already exist, a lot of those choices have already been made for the BMS or the lighting control. And then finally getting to the point where we're able to validate that and actually say, yes, in theory, this would all work. But once we've actually dug into the detailed design and coordinated with the suppliers, we've discovered these various bits that then inform you whether the solution works overall or not. Mm. And ideally, if we can squeeze it in, which is rarer across projects, but something we're trying to do more and more often, is lab testing and validation of a solution before it's deployed to a site. Because we're finding more and more often that the information that's handed over on paper sometimes doesn't reflect the reality when you try and talk to a device. Mm.
Yeah, no, thanks. It's very interesting describing that process. You mentioned there about like vendor selection. I imagine a very important mm-hmm. part of the process. And previously, you know, with your experience at Honeywell Schneider, and you mentioned earlier like those five sort of big companies within building automation. I mean, what's your sense of like the vendor landscape now, coming from quite an independent position, I would say? I mean, do you see it changing? There's been quite a lot of new startups that we, you know, that we track over the years. Are they having a bigger impact now on the market?
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot more attention towards smaller entities being able to fulfill some of the needs that people in the market are after. I think the difficulty always comes from scalability when the client, for example, is a multinational portfolio and they're looking to deploy a solution not just in one territory or region, but, you know, across the world. And naturally, their choices become limited because the only entities that are ready to serve them across every territory are those big incumbent giants. So I think there is definitely value in going to the incumbents, to the big guys, for certain things, depending on what your needs are as a client. Certainly for global portfolio type solutions, where you're going to need engineering resource on the ground to enable a solution, then there's definitely value to be had there. Then we've also got to factor in, you know, just how much machinery exists within these entities to deliver product. So being able to have massive amounts of R&D funding, have very clear product life cycles, and going from knowing that clients want a new feature to shipping a box that has that feature and doing it in a way that's well tested and well supported. They're really good at that. And I wish they would do more of that. You know, they are very good at creating and shipping boxes. And if that was their main focus, with a more open approach to, here's some documentation about how you interact with our hardware, they'd be in a much better place to support the overall movement within the industry. But I think that that wall that people hit when they're trying to do the next thing and they get told that the big fancy system that they bought can't do that because that wasn't part of the product design cycle. And they might need to wait 3 to 4 years before that product feature is integrated and things like that. So when people get to that wall of capability, that's when we're finding that people are much more interested in going for a smaller company or a more agile company that may not be at that scale, but has much more agility in terms of adding features or solving a problem that is unique.
Yeah, no, that's, I think that's really good feedback. Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. Did, well, I guess, you know, if there's nothing more to add, I was going to ask, I had a couple of final questions for you, but I think first one would be, is there, based on, you know, all the kind of conversations and questions you've answered here, is there sort of one thing that stands out to you that you would want to change in the industry if you could?
In terms of, I guess the lesson that I've learned that I'd want people to have for free as a salesperson that worked for large companies and has been involved in those conversations, I'd say the one thing I want the buying side of this market to take away would be, if the only contact that you had is with a salesperson, do not make that purchasing decision. And really what that boils down to for me is the discrepancy between what is pitched from sales, what is available in the marketing material and the brochures and the website, and how vague that tends to be, and then the technical reality of what are the languages, what are the protocols, how does it speak, how does it network. And if you're making the purchasing decisions at this end of the tree, where your only interface with the person that you're that from the organization that you're buying from is the salesperson, who themselves is often quite far removed from the reality of how the solution works, then you may be buying into, you know, magic beans and a beanstalk that doesn't necessarily exist.
That, I think, is very good advice for anybody. And then my final question, Zane, what is the one thing that you would want the audience to take away from today, based on everything you said?
Yeah, I think as much as I'm a realist, I think people tend to look at that more as pessimism. It's really not that. I'm very optimistic about where we are as an industry and the direction that we're moving in. I'm also terrified of the scale of the challenges that we need to solve and the headwinds, you know, that face us as we're trying to pursue those outcomes. But more than anything, I'd want to communicate optimism to the industry as a whole. There is so much attention now on what we're doing and how we're doing it. And naturally, I think, you know, that light that's being shed will hopefully uncover a lot of progress in future years. So I think we're definitely on the right track. And I'm really positive and optimistic about the direction we're headed in compared to the path that we've been on today.
Yeah. No, and a great way to end. I agree. Like, I feel like that sometimes as well, you know, that realism does get confused with pessimism. And it's not the case. It's just, you know, you've tried and tested kind of experience that about how things can be implemented. And, you know, that's you can still be optimistic.
Yeah, definitely. And the fact that you're more optimistic because you know it can work.
Yeah, exactly. Look, well, thank you so much for that today. I think there was some really good advice in there for people as well. So, look forward to future conversations. And thanks again for taking the time today.
Yeah, no, appreciate it. Thanks a lot, James.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Bye-bye for now.